Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. I'm your host, Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on X, the Everything app. It's all happening on X at JWright929. As always, you can listen to us on the radio dial, 92.9 FM, 680 AM. But if you're away from the radio dial and you want to keep listening, you can do so over on the Odyssey app. Free to download, free to listen. You can also stream us on the TuneIn Radio app as well as the iHeartRadio app. We got live streams going over on YouTube, Twitch, and X, the Everything app. It is all happening on X. Back for just an absolute marathon day. He is the producer of the program. You can follow him on the Everything app at KingGeorge94. George, good day, sir.
Good afternoon, Jeffrey. How's it going? How was the that nice storm we got last night over by you guys?
Had no clue it happened.
Oh, you just
slept right through it. I did get the nice note from my wife as she was going to bed that she would be waking up to ride the Peloton if we had power in the morning. So, but we did have power in the morning.
Well, that's good.
And
always,
she
always a plus.
Did ride the Peloton. Let's welcome to the program my company, as he is each and every Tuesday on the program. He is the host of VSiN's College Football, College Basketball Betting Podcast. You can also check him out on weeknights airing on VSiN Primetime. He's the host of that program. He's on the Everything app at one Tim Murray. Tim, good day, sir.
Howdy. It is a good day. A lot going on. Playoffs, reading through draft grades, always an important process. I'm actually at the point where I've come full circle.
All right, how so?
And I like draft grades now. Because everyone hates them and they call them all meaningless. I'm like, you know what? Now I'm in. I'm in on draft grades.
So my problem is I don't necessarily think they're meaningless. I think the problem is draft grades essentially are the definition of confirmation bias.
Like, it's all based off of like, all right, who's your favorite draft evaluator, whether it be Dane Brugler, Daniel Jeremiah, Todd McShay, et cetera. And then where those players went, to your point, is how you grade them.
Correct. So,
and it's like, look, NFL teams make dumb decisions all the time, but you got to believe that they have a different board than those in the media space, you know? So, yeah, it is funny, but look, I fell for it. Like, there were a handful of teams that, you know, we talked about it last night on the show that I liked and players that I liked, but a lot of that was like, I watch a lot of college football, so... You know, Denzel Boston going early second round. I'm like, I like Denzel Boston. I think he's really good. So cool. You know?
Oh, there's no question about that. We'll get more into the draft in terms of takeaways, because I think there's also something other fascinating that's going on, and we can maybe think about it and then talk about it then. But I do wonder how much the rookie salary cap, the fact that you basically don't have to have your highest paid player be whoever you drafted number one, and the fact that we now have it slotted and there's a cap, I do wonder how that's impacted the draft. Because the one thing that we were talking about on Friday, which is, here's the cold reality of whatever draft grade you want to give out and however you want to think about the draft, more than half of the players that are even drafted in the first round are probably going to end up being busts. But that doesn't mean that the draft is a worthless enterprise and whatnot. Like, I'm not saying that, but I think what has been fascinating is, if you know you're going to have to give essentially a 7-year contract, and I think Sam Bradford's last was 762, maybe.
Let me look it up real quick. But yeah, Sam Bradford,
he's the last to get
the highest paid.
I don't know if he ended up becoming the highest paid, but at the time, he is the very last of the guys that got the
6-year, $78 million.
6 years, $78 million. Okay.
$50 million guaranteed. And that was 26 years ago. Or sorry, 16 years ago.
16 years ago. But if you know you're having to sink in a bunch of guaranteed money to a guy that you've got no idea if you can play or not, I can see where that would make you a little more risk averse.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Bradford's like, I mean, in the end, like, if you needed a quarterback, they were taking quarterbacks. Like, so be it. But what I do think has happened in the NFL is teams are now more willing with the controlled contracts to be riskier early at those because they don't have to pay the penalty that they would. You know, you're not sinking in a bunch of money to a guy that's not even playing for you. And I'd be curious to know if that's impacted how teams draft, because the other thought that I've had with the draft is, does it not feel like we should be better at it?
Yeah, I mean, the bust rate on quarterbacks continues to be at an astronomical rate, right?
Yeah, and I think also, though, maybe part of the... because it feels like particularly...
Are you talking about a team like, can I give you an example of like the Patriots? They drafted Will Campbell fourth overall a year ago, and they basically drafted his replacement in the first round this year. And they told us, no, Will Campbell's going to be a left tackle. And we were, a lot of the smarter people, I'm not going to pretend to be like, no, I watched the tape. Will Campbell's a right tackle. But that's kind of what the smart people told us. And now they drafted Caleb Lomu from Utah. And basically everything I've heard is like, he's been a left tackle his whole life and will be a left tackle in the NFL.
Well, and I think you can even go back to the, you know, if you want to go back to the Reuben Bain discussion, and Will Campbell fell into the same category. Now it's the other side of the ball, but Will Campbell is a tackle with short arms. And when everyone wants to roll their eyes, it's like, guys, these traits matter for a reason. It does not mean that that is, it doesn't mean that his arms are going to prevent him from being a great player. But what the data has suggested is that this is a problem. And it doesn't mean that Reuben Bain will not be a great player. It does, like, you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't mean that guys can't overcome it, but it is a trait that matters. And so there's a few other things that I wanted to get into. We'll save that for draft discussion. Eric Hallstein's going to join us during the next segment. We'll also get into the list. We'll get Tim's read on everything happening with Brennan Sorsby and where that might be headed. We also have some NBA mock drafts out, ESPN. Jeremy Wu has got the latest, so we'll talk about that because that's our next draft to focus up on.
When's the all-important day?
Why do I have May 19th in my head? I don't know why. May 10th.
May 10th. All right. Right around the corner.
So
what are the TV ratings going to be like in Memphis?
High. Very, very high.
3 p.m. or sorry, 2 p.m. on ABC.
Very
Sunday, May 10th.
Very, very, very high. Because, I mean, we're a market that watches the NBA even if the Grizzlies are or are not in it. So
I would be curious to know, because Memphis has, what, the
six best odds.
The other five markets, Washington, I'll tell you what, Memphis will be higher than Washington. I can guarantee you that. Indiana, they might be into it.
Well, I think they're in like the best spot you could be in the lottery, where your bad year was the result of catastrophic injuries. But
absolutely,
like, you're going to have your guys back, and now you get to add another piece. Like, for them, it feels like it's stealing almost.
Yeah, they're in the best spot. I still laugh that I'm looking at these odds right now, and I'm like, the team that just swept the first round for a third straight year,
mm-hmm,
won the title a year ago, probably going to win the title again. There's a 1.5% chance that they get the number one pick, and a 7% chance they're in the top four.
I thought it was nine.
The ghost of David Stern cannot allow this to happen.
Well, I'm glad you discussed it, because I was thinking about this last night.
Ooh, Memphis number two.
There you go. Hey, we'll take that. Listen, at this point, it's like, it's what we have to look forward to. But when you mention the ghost of David Stern, and we can all be at fault of looking back at a different era and thinking it was better then, you know, the players then are better than they are now. Like, however you want to, nostalgia porn exists for a reason. You know what I mean? Like, with the bombarding of the way that it used to be. I think, though, that this is actually interesting as a question. Is the NBA brand healthy? Because I think this is true. I think the NBA business is healthy. I do wonder, is the NBA brand healthy?
It does feel, I don't know if cool's the right word, but doesn't it feel like it's hip to be like, "Pah, the NBA, I don't watch the NBA." Like it feels like that's the hip thing to do right now. Maybe with more of the, I don't know. I saw something, my colleague JVT, Jonathan Von Tobel, who's our NBA guy and obviously is going to defend the league. And we even talked about it last week regarding the regular season product. It's not a very good product. But I saw some clip making the rounds and JVT retweeted it. And essentially the host of some show said, "The NBA, the product's never been worse. I don't watch it." But and it's like, well, you just completely eliminate. Like, if Ryan Russillo or Zach Lowe or Bill Simmons, whoever you want to throw out there, is like, "The product is bad and I watch it nonstop," I'll listen to that. But it does feel like there is kind of like, hey, it's cool to crap on the NBA right now. And I'll be honest, it is not a sport that I have regularly watched, even when it was at its peak in the regular season. I just have never been a big regular season NBA guy. I love college basketball. I love college football. And then the playoffs roll around and I'm all in. I think it's great basketball in the playoffs. Is every game going to be perfect? No. The injuries really stink. The fact that Anthony Edwards is out just stinks. Luka Doncic being out stinks. Austin Reeves, Dante DiVincenzo, Joel Embiid having to get an appendectomy right before the start of the playoffs. Like, those are unfortunate situations, but
aren't we? Isn't there another big name player? I'm having to do it all for me. I felt like there was one.
Well, I mean, we're also coming off.
Jalen Williams.
Yeah, Jalen Williams has been out. We're also coming off of a playoffs from a year ago where two of the biggest stars in the postseason tore their Achilles.
Yes.
Jason Tatum and Tyrese Halliburton.
One in the Game 7 of the Finals.
Where it looked like we were going to have an epic all-time Game 7, and then he pops his Achilles. And not that long ago, Kevin Durant, I know it was, I guess, 7 years ago now, but like Kevin Durant in the NBA Finals. So there's a lot of that. Just, I don't know if it's unlucky. Maybe someone out there who's smarter than me can tell me why players are getting hurt in the playoffs. It seems like more than usual, but I don't know. I was just kind of thinking it feels like it is a hipster thing to do. You're going down to Brooklyn and instead of watching the NBA, now you're like, "Nah, I don't watch the NBA. They don't play games." Well, it was better when it was like, to your point about nostalgia porn. And like, look, it's like what people used to say, "Well, bring LeBron back to the 80s and see how he do." I'm like, he dropped 40.
Yeah, he'd be pretty good.
He'd be pretty good. He's 6'9", faster than everyone. He'd do okay. Like, yeah, there were some big dudes. He was also bigger than them. And it's like, turn on, everyone wants to like, the Bad Boy Pistons. All right, turn on a December 16th game between the Sonics and the Bullets in 1987. It probably wasn't awesome.
No, there's no question. Part of the issue is the fact that we now collectively, if you want to watch every NBA basketball game, you can do so. And you're not just being spoon-fed, here's Jordan in the Garden again for the right. fourth time this year. And you're not being spoon-fed the best games at the best time. Where I'm...
No, I want to... I just wanted to...
Yes, you're
I don't want people to be like, I'm saying the NBA product is super healthy. We talked about it last week. It is not. The regular season is not, in my opinion, a very healthy situation right now from a night in and night out basis. But I think the point that you make is a very good one, which is, you know, growing up for us, we're around the same age, late 30s. It's like, I watched my NBA. I got my NBA consumption by watching SportsCenter in the morning.
Yeah.
And be like, damn, that was an awesome game. Well, I got to see it in a condensed one-minute version of all the best plays.
Well, and if you think about it, the new generation is doing something similar. It's just the delivery is different. So if you look at where the NBA is most popular, the NBA is most popular on social media in highlight forms. And if you think about, okay, what is that really? That's a bunch of kids essentially watching SportsCenter. Now, this is where I am a little bit more, I don't know, skeptical, doubtful, but like I am curious. When you go back to your point of it feels like now that it's hip to rag the NBA, that's a generational like turn or a flip, if you will, from, you know, in the mid-2000s and really I feel like it peaked in kind of the 20-teens, which was the NBA is the best product on the planet.
Right.
Where it went from, but I do think the larger point that I've always thought the NBA's problem is, whether it's true or not, or whether it's intentional or not, is probably the right way. The NBA has always desired to be cool. And inherently, I think that is the riskiest of all brandings. Like, say what you want about the National Football League, but what we just watched is not cool in the sense of the presentation. If anything, it's like probably checklisty. Like, it, you know, the NFL at times feels like, all right, here's a flyover. We're the sixth branch of the military. And by the way, say no to hate. Like, they'll do the lean far into the military culture and then, all right, here's some social justice to try and serve everybody. Like, the NBA has done this move where they want to position themselves as on the right side of history or being clearly to a certain social norm, which tends to skew very online. Yet at the same time, we watch it and you go, every decision you make is about making money. It's not about some bigger cause. And it's not to say that I'm saying, like, don't speak up if you've got an opinion. It's like, I don't, it's not that. It's where I find myself going, I feel like I'm driving myself insane, is stop preaching to me when your actions are all you actually care about is money.
Well, I was also going to talk about, to your point about the NFL and how they don't have to be cool. They just had 800,000 people show up in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania in the end of April to watch names get called.
I want an accounting firm to validate those results.
Regardless, even if the numbers are fudged.
I mean, you and I watched it. It was insane. Like, you're sitting there going, like, I love the NFL draft. It's one of my favorite events.
It is. I don't know why it is. I love it so much.
I can't. I'm with you. If it were in the backyard, I don't know if I would go out and watch it. I want to watch it on TV. It is inherently a television product. Now, if you're someone that wants to go and has fun, like, by all means, but it's like, that is something I cannot put into my head.
I don't, yeah, to your point, like, next year it's in D.C., my hometown. I don't have any interest of going back home. Like, I desperately, with all my might, want to go to Lambeau Field to watch Notre Dame play Wisconsin Labor Day weekend. Like, that is so high on my list of things to do. Going to the NFL draft in my neck of the woods and just standing there, I'm good. I love it. It's my favorite. It's one of my favorite sporting events. And I don't know if it's just where it's positioned in the calendar. I think that really helps. Where it's like 3 months removed from football. And I mean, to be honest, like, this is just me being a sicko. Like, I'm like, hey, man, when are we going to get those week one game times announced for college football? Like, I'm ready. When are we going to get the bowl games? When are they dated?
Do we know all the bowl games?
We got two coming back. We got two new ones.
Return
of the Poinsettia Bowl.
The Poinsettia Bowl's back.
The first ever Puerto Rico Bowl.
I think Poinsettia Bowl is actually the first time I laid eyes on Josh Allen. And really? I was like, oh, who is this? And then 2 years later, they were trying to spoon feed me that he should be the number one quarterback. And I was like, you can't teach accuracy. Like, I don't know what I'm missing here.
I'm pretty sure there's a clip out me somewhere saying that Josh Allen was going to be a bust. That That did not age well.
I mean, in fairness, he wasn't even the number one quarterback on the Bills board. But, like, all you have to do is, like, I was, like, six games into his rookie season. I was like, yeah, no, this is awesome. Like, sign me up. Like, this is worth watching.
Yeah, but back to, like, to the NBA, I don't know. And maybe I think a lot of it has to do with the medium that we work in, right? And it used to just be sports talk radio in local markets. And then, of course, we had ESPN and Fox Sports Radio. But now we've got clips to go with it all. Every show is, we need debate every single morning. And I feel like it's easier to debate the NBA. It's a very easy sport to discuss. And when you don't like when a player is dogging it or playing poorly, right? So I don't know if that has something to do with it. It's just easier to criticize and critique NBA players and basketball in general because it's, for the most part, it's, of the four major sports, it's the most simplistic, right? Basketball is a pretty... I mean, I'm not saying there
are No. You played it, but I think this is what's true though. If you look at football in the 90s and you look at football today, okay, let's go through what the key differences are. Number one, the things that you can get away with from a defensive perspective. You know, all right, we can't bring somebody down by the horse collar and we're now protecting guys going over the middle.
Can't hit him in the head.
Right.
Can't hit a quarterback low.
Right.
Yeah,
but for the most part, the biggest fundamental changes in terms of down to down is whether or not you throw the ball on early downs and whether or not you run the ball on early downs. But for the most part, it kind of looks the same. Would you agree?
Yes.
Baseball, what are the key differences from the 90s in terms of gameplay? It's mostly strategy. It's mostly whether or not you're a strikeout, throwout, and then I think the other key difference is the max effort that we're seeing on the mound. Like, guys are basically throwing as hard as they can for as long as they can until their elbow gives out. You know, I mean, remember Billy Wagner, who was like the first guy that was like routinely would hit 100 on the gun? Like, and remember, it was like, it was a must-see moment. Like, Wagner, I remember an All-Star Wagner came in, and you're like, oh, my God, is he going to do it? Is he going to hit 100? And now we don't even blink when guys, you know, we see guys throwing 102, 103. And so, but in terms of the actual baseball, it's still relatively similar. I think the thing that makes basketball the most different is we now are watching basically there's no real stylistic differences and everybody's just firing up a bunch of threes or getting dunks and layups. And that has been, you know, we've moved the ball more to the perimeter rather than the inside. And I do think that that's a huge part of it. And then I think another big aspect is whether or not it's LeBron, whether or not it's you ain't cheating, you ain't trying, the flopping is really tough to watch night in, night out.
Yeah, the SGA, I am curious because I know, you know, my co-host on Primetime on VSiN, who is, I would say, skews more to the old man get off my lawn type of gentleman. And I don't think he would be mad at me saying that, Matt Eumanns. But he is like all
Doesn't Matt
on,
describe himself as that?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
But he's all in on SGA. He can't stand him anymore. And it's like, you look at this team, and I was wondering, at what point would we start to hate the Thunder? Because that's just what we do now. There's no more admiration to like what we had. I know this is a kind of a weird side note. The Bulls, Jordan, just admiration to me is one of the craziest things in sports. Because, like, I do a radio show every day in Milwaukee, and they speak of Michael Jordan in, like, reverence. I'm like, he was the arch rival 60 minutes away. How, you should hate him. They're like, oh, no, we like Jordan. But what? It's just so different from how we looked at Jordan to how we look at the stars nowadays. and, you know, Steph came up. You're like, whoa, look at this team. They're shooting a ton of threes. This is fun. And then, now part of it had to do with Kevin Durant coming to them, but it's like eventually.
A huge part of it's Kevin Durant, and then the other part of it's
Draymond.
They're extremely self-righteous.
But it's just, we will turn on everybody. All the greats we turn on in sports now, especially in basketball. So I was wondering, I'm like, all right, how can we hate this Oklahoma City team? They're kind of like, you know, there's no superstars. There's no big three like Miami. There's no, like, Shea doesn't really talk ever.
No, right? Shea's exactly what you want your best player to be. Like, but he seems like, to, like, only care about.
Ah, I got it. He's a flopper. And it's like, nah, the flopping's going to make people turn on the Thunder at some point here.
Well, I do think it's a legitimate question of, we are watching in real time, what if James Harden was the best player alive? Because I don't know how you felt about him, but even at peak of his powers, James Harden, it was never for me.
No, I was never. I hated his play.
Like
the baiting, the foul baiting, the all of that. Like,
doesn't mean I don't think it's a skill. It doesn't mean like I'm not sitting there going that I wouldn't have done it if I were in his position. But in terms of what I want to watch in basketball, I did not care for it. And I do think that is going to be, because I don't think this Thunder team's going away, and I don't think this guy's just a flash in the pan player.
Who, SGA?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
No, I mean, I think we're like, what? But, like, I do think, like, it's this interesting, we're watching it in, like, real time. There's, like, a couple of interesting examples. I get it. Durant's knee was hobbled, and, you know, maybe, you know, it's not like the world's fairest fight, but it's like when KD and LeBron went up, what is that, like last Sunday or two Sundays ago, whatever it was, the NBA playoffs are so long, I forget, but the game two, when they're both in it, it was like just a microcosm of their careers. Kevin Durant's a great basketball player, but he is not the same thing as LeBron James. And the other thing that I've been kind of wondering, because yeah, they won last night, but there's also a Timberwolves side of that. Jokic has not been good in this series.
Nope.
And he has been a guy that, in particular, the NBA tastemakers, I don't even necessarily like saying media, but the tastemakers in general think the world of. And I think he's...
It took a while, though, remember? Because it was... I mean, I remember even talking to, like, when the Nuggets won their first title, and I talked to my neighbor who's a big NBA guy, and he was like, nah, Heat are going to take care of business. I'm like, what world do you live in? I'm like, the Heat are going to get squashed like bugs. Like, Nikola Jokic is unbelievable. But yeah, now it does feel like, and I'm still in the bag for the Joker, but it's fair to call out a player, to your point, when they're not playing to their peak performance, and there's no way you could say that the Joker has been playing to his peak in this series against Minnesota.
No, like it's like, and when people want to come back with the numbers, like I'm watching every possession. Like I watched this guy play. I think incredibly highly of him as a basketball player. It's like he's not playing well. Like I can see it. But it also was like a reminder that, okay, post LeBron and Steph, who has a... So I guess we could say Kawhi gets the additional title in Toronto. But Giannis has one. Tatum and Brown have one. Jokic has one. SGA has one, but now he's favored to get another.
Mm-hmm.
Like, going back to your initial point of like the reverence for the Jordan Bulls, it's like the fact that he goes 6-for-6 really made us like underappreciate how hard it is to be the best player on multiple title teams.
Six for seven.
Which one are you not counting?
He did come back and lose in the playoffs. I love how we...
No, but he's 6-for-6 in the finals.
I know. It's like Joe Montana.
Yeah, but like
would you rather have Joe? Would you rather have Joe Montana 4-for-4, or would you rather have Tom Brady 7-for-10?
No, Terry Bradshaw is one of the greatest spin zones of all time. He won seven, but he lost three. That's four.
You Jordan hater. I'm not a Jordan hater.
No, no, no.
I'd like to point out that fact. But
if we're going
to
do that, though, if we're going to lean into that take, though, we got to go further. It's not 6-7.
Oh, he got smoked in the playoffs.
Yeah, if we're just going to do that, then let's just go, every time that he lost to the Pistons.
That's never happened.
Yeah, of course. But
your overall point is a very good one, right? The fact that they were able to get to the mountaintop and never have a slip up when you look at Golden State, as good as they were, they did slip up against LeBron and the Cavs, right? Or you look at, I wouldn't compare the Miami Heatles to the Bulls, but in the fourth season, they lost to the Spurs. Now they were breaking down from Chris Bosh was hurt, Dwayne Wade was kind of banged up, but regardless.
I mean, the Lakers lost to the Pistons.
Right, the Lakers lost, yeah, in year four.
The Kobe Shaq Lakers lost to the Pistons. Now they won three straight.
But yes, they lost to the Pistons, and then, even look at the Spurs. They won four titles, but they had off years in there. Did the Spurs ever win back-to-back? They never won. They always kind of won every other year.
Oh, this used to be a parlor trick I could do.
Wasn't it 5-7-9-13?
I want to say they never went back-to-back. They kind of had the odd thing going.
They won the shortened year, right? They won the...
The first 99-2000 or whatever, the first lockout season.
And then I thought it was 2000... Then it was 05, 07, 09, 13, something like that. Maybe I can't remember. But yeah, they never won back-to-back.
All right, so 99, as we mentioned.
Was it 99 or 2000? What was the year that?
I think they're calling it the 99 season. No, they're calling it the 1999 NBA Finals. So the 98, 99 season.
They beat the Knicks, right? That was the 1-8.
Correct.
Yeah.
And then the Lakers win three straight.
Okay. Then the Spurs won. No, mm-hmm. then the Pistons.
No, Spurs, then Pistons. Spurs, Heat, Spurs, Celtics, Lakers, Lakers, Mavs, Heat, Spurs, Warriors, Cavs, Warriors, Warriors, Raptors, Lakers, bubble championship, Bucks, Warriors, Nuggets, Celtics, Thunder. So they never had back-to-back.
Yeah. 99, 03, 05, 07, 14.
I don't know. We'll talk.
Do they have a chance to do it this year?
I think so because I do think that they can. I think that they can defend on the perimeter. The one thing about the Thunder that is interesting in this era, they're not a great shooting team. You want to talk about the Pistons, they're the closest thing we have to the Bad Boy Pistons. They're winning it on the other end of the floor. And that's kind of my whole thing with the SGA thing. I think what bothers me less is the foul baiting. What bothers me the most, those guys get away with murder on defense. They abide by the principle of, we will make them call fouls. And nobody does it. They take Draymond's approach of make them call the tech. But they use it on defense.
I've come to, and I know we've got to hit a break, and you've got Eric on the other side. I've come to this is my belief. Even though the odds would indicate that the Oklahoma City Thunder are a bigger favorite, I think the Celtics winning the East is far more likely than the Thunder winning the West.
I'm in complete agreement.
I think they'll both get there, but I think the Thunder's challenge against the Spurs, as we saw multiple times in the regular season, I look at the East, man, and I'm like, if the Celtics are going to play like they did the other night, good luck beating them four times in the East. I'm not saying they're going to win the championship.
No, I see the exact. I've told you this 3 or 4 weeks ago. If you offered me the Celtics, Thunder, and the Spurs, or the field, I was taking the three.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, Eric Hasseltine next, right here on Jeff Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. That music means we welcome to the program the Memphis Grizzlies Radio Network play-by-play announcer. He is Eric Hasseltine, kind enough to join us each and every Tuesday on the program. Eric, do the Thunder get away with more on the offensive or defensive end in terms of a good whistle?
Defensive end.
I know this is puts me in the minority. I know everyone goes nuts with the foul baiting. I get more upset by the they just commit murder on the perimeter, and they're like, "We dare you to call it."
Exactly. They just basically say, "We're going to keep doing this till you call it." And there's nothing wrong with that. I've actually praised it on our broadcast. And like, they're going to keep doing it until they call it. And they're not going to call a foul every play. So they are physical. They are aggressive. They jump the ball. They get the ball out of other teams' top scorers' hands with physicality. And they jump over screens. They bump. Now, on the offensive end, they do set a lot of moving screens. And that's a lot of teams. I mean, I wish that's something that could get cleaned up when a guy's clearly moving or throws his hip out. It gets called, but it gets missed a lot too. But yeah, it's 100% on the defensive end because that starts frustrating you. And then on the offensive end, you go back and you're frustrated. And then you get called, and it's a mental game too. You know, they understand it. And Mark Dagonal's done an amazing job with that.
Yeah. And like, I also wonder, do you think that their depth allows them to do that?
Yes, absolutely. I was, you know, listening a little this morning to the guys on NBA radio with Isola and Scalabrine. They talked about that. And Brian Scalabrine, having played in the league, he said, you look at their roster top to bottom, and, you know, that phone can ring for Sam Presti anytime and say, well, what about this guy? What about that guy? What about giving up this guy? And go down the line. I mean, Jared McCain's a heck of a player. He can't get off their bench, and they just picked him up for nothing. A.J. Mitchell was a second-round guy. Now, you know, Hartenstein will probably be moved on from just because of the contract situation. You do have to balance the budget. But, I mean, they managed their draft picks, and they went and got guys that fit what they do. They didn't just go for, oh, yeah, we want this guy. And they've missed on some. I mean, Usman Jang never really panned out, and he was a lottery pick. They've had other guys that it didn't work. But the guys that they've had, I mean, guys like Kenrich Williams, anybody could have had. Lou Dort, anybody could have had Lou Dort. He was undrafted. So they've hit on guys that they have a culture, they have a way of doing things. And if you fit, great. If not, there's the door. And they're not afraid to move on from guys. Now, you know, when everybody talks about what, and we've talked about this on the show, what the Grizzlies have done acquiring all these draft picks, and, oh, it's just like the Thunder. Well, the Thunder, you know, were able to flip Paul George into picks and a guy named Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who turned out to be pretty awesome. So at the time, he was not. So it's also they've done their due diligence. And, you know, I think when you talk about Sam Presti, he's always been this way. I mean, sure, Kevin Durant was there. You were going to take Kevin Durant number two. I don't know that you hang your hat on, oh, it was such a brilliant pick. I mean, those guys were going 1-2, no doubt. And then after that, in that draft, it was Horford and Conley and Jeff Green and guys. But it was clearly Durant or Oden, Durant or Oden, Oden or Durant. And Portland did what most teams would have done. They took the big that they thought could be a generational talent at one in Greg Oden, and it didn't work out. Well, you're not making it's not a hard decision once that pick was made. I'm sure then Seattle turned in Kevin Durant immediately. But the one that they got really right was picking Russell Westbrook fourth, when everybody went, who? Like, why? 11 points a game at UCLA. But if you go back, and I know Vernon had talked about this, talking to the Tiger players that played against him when they got done in the Final Four after playing them, and they had Kevin Love, and they went, the guy on that team that's going to be the dude is Russell Westbrook. He's the way he plays. And they hit that. And they hit that right. And then they were able to get James Harden in that draft, where the Grizzlies took Hashim Thabeet. And they didn't go for somebody else. They didn't go for Ricky Rubio. They went for James Harden. And so they've made good draft picks, but nobody's ever going to be perfect. But it's just building it through that stuff and then being able to move off of guys. They realized Josh Giddey, as solid a player as he was not fitting what they needed to do with the talent they had. So they went and got a defensive 3-and-D guy in Alex Caruso. And he's perfect for what they do. So when you have the young talent to be able to move and get guys that fit your roles, and even if on paper talent level favors the guy you're giving away, if in your system the other guy fits better, that's a win. So, yeah, it's the way they coach, the way they teach it, that you can tell that they know exactly what they're supposed to do.
As we discuss the draft, contextually, May 10th, the draft lottery, mm-hmm. How significant of a day is it in Grizzlies history?
It's big. I mean, it's very big because it's not like the end-all be-all, because you could very well end up in the top four. You could very well end up picking eighth. But it's a big night. It's been the same other years too. And I think the year probably it was the biggest was the Durant Oden year where the Grizzlies had the worst record. And at that time by the odds, they had a 50-50 shot of getting one or two, and they didn't. And they didn't even get three, and they got four, and it turned out to be a guy who had a big hand in this franchise's success in Mike Conley. But at the time, people were not happy. I mean, I was telling this story the other day. We were hosting the lottery watch party. ESPN had a camera inside the downtown Flying Saucer. I'm hosting it, and the picks are coming, and up comes number six, and it's Milwaukee, and you go, oh, gosh. Mm-hmm. And everybody cheers, and you go, that's not good, gang. We're picking fourth. And everybody's like, how do you know? And I'm like, well, Milwaukee had the third worst record, and they're picking six, so that means they dropped three places. The next one's going to be Seattle, and the next one's going to be Memphis. And then these three teams, it was Portland, Seattle, and Atlanta, are the top three. They all moved up. So that was a big one because at that time you needed somebody. And I always said in that one, I would be stoked to get number two for the very reason of what happened. If you get number one and for whatever reason it doesn't work, no one's going to fault you, but it does set you back. Now Portland was able to come away with Damian Lillard later because Sacramento made an absolute blunder in their pick of Thomas Robinson one year. Despite the fact that by all accounts, from when I talked to people there, Lillard tested off the charts in their workouts and they decided to go with the big, figuring that it was easier to find a guard. Turns out it wasn't accurate. So,
it's funny how that thinking is completely flipped now. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. Oh, it's much harder to find a guard. You can find a big, you can find a replacement big.
Yeah. Because the game's changed.
Yeah.
Because back then you were getting the ball in the lane a lot more, and you still had guys that could do that. And in Thomas Robinson's defense, I kind of equate the Thomas Robinson thing to a lot like quarterbacks that have only started for one year. And we just saw that obviously with Ty Simpson, and they showed a list of guys that got drafted in the first round that had only played like 15 games or less as a starter. And it's like Mitch Trubisky, Cardale Jones, and guys that went in the first round
Yeah.
Like,
Anthony
oh,
Richardson.
Boy.
Yeah. No, it is not. Yeah. It's not the Hall of Fame.
And so Robinson had backed up the Morris twins and then came out and had a double, double year, basically a 20-10 year at Kansas, but he'd only done it for one year and he was the main guy there. And, you know, I don't know. I can't remember how good Kansas was that year. I imagine they weren't terrible. They won the Big 12 because they won it every year. But it's one of those, okay, you're the best player in this group. Does that make you the best player in that position? And so it can go either way. But it is big because this team right now obviously needs to figure out what the direction's going to be, how you're going to build the culture, who you're going to build it around. You have pieces that you believe in, obviously, and Cedric and Jalen Wells and Zach Edey when healthy. But where's your star power? Where's your star power coming from? Where's the guy that goes in and forces teams to game for that? And that's why it's big. If you can get in the top two, obviously, there's two guys there that are three guys potentially going in one of those two spots, maybe a fourth when you talk about Wilson out of North Carolina, if he's declared. It's hard to talk about these things till they've officially declared, but you can talk about a couple of them now already. But, you know, are those the guys that are there? Or if you fall further back, is it a guy that's really good but not, you know, a potential all-NBA player? And right now, you need the excitement of having someone the fan base can get behind again because it's been there and it's now not there. And now you want to build around someone you can see a long-term future with.
Well, as you were going through the history, it is kind of, I don't know, ironic to think about, or it's certainly noteworthy. Two of the guys that are going to have their numbers hanging in the arena for as long as the arena stands are Mark and Mike, two guys mm-hmm. that were drafted, you know, two guys. Well, I guess you could say the argument would be the opposite, but Mike is drafted when the team has Lowry. Mark's on the team, mm-hmm. and yet they take Hashim Thabeet. It's like guys that maybe even at the time weren't even thought of like, oh, it's the future. But like in the end, to me, the lesson learned there is like, get the pick right. That's what matters the most.
Well, yeah, You're right. And Mark's situation was a little bit different. And, you know, they had Mike and Kyle, remember, got injured 7 games in, so you didn't know what Kyle was going to be. And I think in that draft, there was really the assumption at that time, I don't know if the front office assumed that, but the experts assumed that Mike was going to go to Atlanta. Atlanta was in dire need of a point guard, and they were almost certain, everybody thought, are going to go with Mike, and then they're going to go get a big. And then the Grizzlies were like, okay, well, that we could put, you know, Al Horford next to Mark, and that would be a great 1-2 front court. And it would have been, no doubt about it. They would have played really well together. They're both incredible players, but Atlanta opted for that. And then they went, and I'm trying to remember the guy's name. He was at Texas A&M, and he was
AC Law,
lefty. AC Law, exactly. I knew it was, I wanted to say Ace Law, but I knew that was wrong. AC Law. And they thought, okay, well, we can get a point guard a little bit later. Let's take this big that we think really helps us now. And they needed a lot at that time. But you go back to the Thabeet draft, and I remember distinctly there was a lot of debate. Should they go with Tyreek Evans? Should they go with here? I know one of our scouts flat out said Steph Curry is going to be a phenomenal player in this league, the way he shoots the basketball and his basketball IQ, but he had played at Davidson, so he fell down. I mean, my goodness, Johnny Flynn and Ricky Rubio went in front of him to 2 point guard picks to Minnesota before that, hence why that general manager no longer works in the NBA. But the thought was at the time, remember that the Thunder were up and coming, the Grizzlies were up and coming, the Thunder had a kind of a gaping hole at the center position, and you're like, if we don't take the beat, who by the metrics tested really, really well in terms of the athleticism, I mean, he had a vertical leap at the time that a lot of guys that size don't have, and you weren't sure if Mark was going to resign. So if Mark were to leave Memphis after a year, you had the replacement and hopefully someone that could develop, where his skill set said he's got to, you know, you can't teach 7'3" and athletic. But at the time, then Mark decided to stay, and Hasheem didn't develop the way they had hoped he would. And you passed on certain guys. You passed on James Harden, who at the time you had those guys. And then there was the prevailing thought, why would we take Curry when we have a Mike Conley here? So it's tough. You got to get the right guy. And sometimes if you have two of the right guy, you know, like OKC did, and they had Josh Giddey and they had Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, you can parlay that into, okay, well, we definitely have those guys, but now we can move one of them because we have the other guy. And now the other guy is going to have some value to somebody else. So it's there. And it's never an exact science. And it's, you know, again, I've always said it's why these guys get paid to make the decisions they get paid to make. And that's, you know, at the end of the day, that's how their, you know, long-term future is determined, whether they get these things right or not.
I believe DeMichael had the story. Cedric is going to be one of the guys that plays in summer league. Do you like that move?
Yeah, I think it's going to be similar to other years where you've had guys that have proven they can play in the NBA. You send him out there, you let him go do his thing. And if he comes out and he kills it the way you expect him to, then you shut him down. You don't play him. You know, if they do, I would assume they're going to, Salt Lake City again, because they go every year. But if they don't, then you just go to Vegas and you play a couple of games. I mean, they did it with Jamichael Green 1 year when he had been picked up off the free agent wire and still could go, and went out, crushed 2 games, and you're like, all right, you're done. Get out of here. But we don't need it anymore. Because at the end of the day, yeah, you never play a basketball game to lose, but you also are not trying – you're not shooting for summer league championships. So, you know, it's a tough spot. But, yeah, I don't mind it, because you want to get them back in there, get them working in the system and working with the new guys and developing some chemistry. So that's kind of what you do. And I don't have a big problem with that whatsoever.
Okay, and then lastly, did it feel nice to see the Packers to get back to form in the draft? DB, defensive tackle, defensive end. Did get a center, DB, kicker. So – yeah. Almost just all. Yeah. Did it feel nice to just get back to the norm?
Yeah, well, you didn't have a first-round pick. I was kind of watching the third round a little bit where I was, and then all of a sudden, you know, that's the problem when you get into the third round. You get the time clock's on, and then they don't, you know, they're going to break so often because the picks are coming in so fast. that you don't hear about all the trades.
Correct.
Like, wait, where'd we go? I thought we were picking again right here. So I'm okay with it. I mean, if they had had a first-round pick, I wouldn't have mind them seeing going with like a Tyson out of, you know, that I think the Saints got and getting another wide receiver because, you know, they went with Golden last year and he didn't do a whole lot. They lost, I think, Javon Reed. So it's there. But, yeah, the ones that kill me are back in the year where they could have gone up and gotten CeeDee Lamb or gotten Justin Jefferson or whoever was in there. And you're like, okay, those guys could have been yours with a quarterback that was begging you to take a wide receiver. And then obviously everything got sideways with Aaron Rodgers at that time. So, yeah, no, it's Packer way. We're just going to draft all defensive players. We'll figure out the offensive side when we get there.
All right, my man.
We've had like three quarterbacks in 40 years, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, it hasn't been the worst strategy in the world.
No, I mean, someone was talking about that. I think it might have been you and Cobb, but it's been 35 years and they've had three starting
yes.
quarterbacks. I'm like, you know, as much as we complain because we're fans, and I don't complain a lot because they really haven't had a lot of years of ineptitude other than when they've gotten injured. I haven't gone like, okay, like, what are we doing here? Like, it's worked, and they do run it intelligently. I was a little surprised, even though they got Desmond Ridder, that they didn't maybe look at a quarterback available. I mean, I know Nussmeier went late, but, like, why not take a flyer on a guy like that? But they've done that in the past, and it didn't work either.
No, I'm with you. All right, man, we appreciate your time.
All right, brother.
That is Eric Hasseltine. Just want to remind you that you can sell your home the easy way without leaving thousands of dollars on the table. All you have to do is call my friend Josh Hysall from Keller Williams Realty because Josh knows so many people are interested in taking one of those cash offers for their homes. The ones you see on billboards, you know, you get the unsolicited text about them. But all those offers are for thousands less than your home is actually worth. Josh's option, however, is different. It's for the full market value. So you can still take advantage of the same convenience as those lowball offers. You don't